aches and headaches that go with the planning of so magnificent a fair. The many worrisome days and sleepless nights were all worth it to me. For the honor that comes to me now for the second time in my life. I do not know why I have the zechiah of having Dr. Silver respond to my call for the second time when others have failed. 13 years ago, I was chairman of the Long Island Zionist Convention. I took a long shot at that time. Remember, that was the year of 1947. And invited Dr. Silver to come to us then, and he did. And except for a visit of a personal tribute to one of his friends, we have not heard him since. And so when Lou Sitkoff came to me this year and tried to get me to become chairman of the 25th anniversary, I immediately saw 25th Begematria is Silver. And I immediately took pen in hand and I said, what have I got to lose? I'll take a chance and write to Dr. Silver. Ulai Yachos, Ulai Yirachei. Maybe we'll have pity on me and all of us, and maybe we'll yield to a letter. I had quite a little boichbeitach until I got my first answer and then learned that due to illness he did not respond. But when I received that telegram, I kept showing it to everybody and nobody would believe me. As a matter of fact, Dr. Silver, I could have made lots of money if I wanted a rabbi. People were betting me as late as last Friday. Usher, anything you want, Dr. Silver will not come. What they wanted to worry me about, I don't know. But he is here. And we of Long Island feel greatly honored by his presence. I know the Hebrew language is very, very dear to his heart. And during the early hours of the morning, as I was planning what to say to this great Zionist master and teacher of ours, I recalled the immortal lines of an immortal poet to a great man. I only am sorry that those words cannot be translated. But those of you who understand Hebrew will surely recall those words. Savracha amore, mipinu savracha nemana, al kol shelamadnu mimcha, vi al kol shenilmoda, harbei lamadnu mipicha, vi harbei mima shevikashnu matzata lemaneinu. Vanachnu miyatcha yarashnu. Lo rav tzva'acha amore, ach lanu yesh rav. Panecha amirim od yelchu imanu bakrav. Uvisheva drachim im nafutz. Yasfeinu kochavcha. Dr. Silver, for the last years we have been longing for your voice, thirsting for your word, searching for your way, and yearning for you to fill the void. Ptach efo et picha navi acharit. Open now your lips, O prophet of the end. Yesh imcha davar emor. Surely you have a word to say to us. So speak. Daber el bnei Yisrael v'yisahu. Speak to your Zionist children, and then they shall go forward. You in the hour of crisis of Palestine have stood there in that arena when hearts were faint and spirits were weak. You wrestled with all kinds of problems and with all kinds of people. Thank God you, as the great architect of the Jewish state, have played a great role in the birth of the state of Israel. The Zionist movement is confronted now with a great crisis. It awaits your word. Yesh imcha davar. We know that there is the word with you. Emor, speak. Ladies and gentlemen, our great master and Zionist teacher, Dr. Abba Hillel Silver.
I'm happy to be with you this evening. Very happy indeed. I find myself among friends, among old friends, among co-workers, among very faithful co-workers over many years. I want to congratulate the Long Island region upon its silver anniversary. Ko amar Adonai zecharti lach chesed nuraych, avat klulatayach, lechteich acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo zarua. Thus saith the Lord, I hold in remembrance the grace of your youth, your devoted love, when you followed me in the wilderness, in a land that was not sown. Ko amar Adonai in gematria ko is 25. And you may look back with gratitude and with pride over 25 years when you followed your vision in a desert, in a land that is not sown, through 25 hard years of many disappointments and frustrations and apparent defeat, on the way to the promised land. And I believe you ought to have a deep sense of thanksgiving in your heart that your wanderings through these hard and difficult and often very tragic years have led your feet not only to the very threshold of the promised land, but into the promised land. I had the joy of being in Israel again just a few weeks ago. I was in Israel 2 years ago on the occasion of the 10th anniversary celebration of the founding of the state. And I was eager to see now whether the tempo of progress which I observed then had been maintained. I was particularly interested and eager to know how the people in Israel were reacting to the threats of war which Nasser was hurling at them from the borders at that time, and which I understand he is still hurling from the television today. How was this young nation, made up of many peoples who had recently escaped the ravages and horrors of war, how was this young nation reacting to the sending at the time of 4 divisions to the Gaza border by Nasser? Divisions equipped with the latest Russian tanks and planes. Would I find tension in Israel? Fear? Panic, perhaps. And this to me was a real test, a test of character, the character of a nation. I found the people concerned, of course, as they normally would be, but very calm, not at all distraught. They went about their business as usual. There was an air of confidence in young and old. They had taken the measure of the enemy in the Sinai campaign, and if necessary, they would meet him again. They knew that the enemy had more arms and better arms than they had, but they knew also from experience that arms were not enough for victory. They would try to acquire additional arms from the free world if possible, but in the meantime, they were resolved to go about their urgent business of building their country, building towns and villages and settlements and schools and factories. They intended to become strong through peaceful construction all along the line. It was clear to me again, but I knew right along, that the people of Israel wanted peace. There was hope in their hearts, but not hate. They were not interested in territorial expansion, such as Nasser charges them with constantly, as a sort of a decoy to detract attention from his own expansionist ambitions. The Israeli were not interested in any forms of expansion, except those in industry, science, and the arts. And I find also that young people were interested in sports. One of the exciting events when I was in Israel was a soccer game, which I witnessed between the Israeli soccer team and a Greek team, a team from Greece. On this Sunday afternoon, 50,000 people, mostly young people, gathered in the great stadium of Ramat Gan to watch this soccer game. And it was the talk for days before, the talk of the youth, even of some of the elders of the nation. And when the Israeli team finally won the game, you would think that it was the greatest victory over the Greeks since the days of the Maccabees 2,000 years ago. I was in Israel on Purim, the holiday which, as you know, commemorates the triumph of our people over Haman. I thought that the Israeli would perhaps utilize this holiday, the political situation in the world being what it is, for a mass demonstration against Nasser, against Egypt, and the modern enemies of Israel. Nothing of the sort. I was in Tel Aviv, a guest of the city, to watch the great Purim parade. Some 15,000 children from the schools and the high schools of Tel Aviv and its environs marched down the main street in gay costumes, many bands, many floats, true carnival spirit. And the keynote of all these floats was not hate, but international peace and friendship. The numerous floats spoke of the United Nations, which was represented as a gorgeous rainbow of colors in one of the floats. And every nation passed by in its national costumes, its national symbols, and they were all cheered. Even Great Britain, which up until a few years ago was looked upon as the enemy of the Jews of Palestine, was cheered and applauded. And special attention was paid to countries like Ghana and Burma, which had recently established very friendly relations with the State of Israel. The people of Israel want peace, and someday it will come, Nasser notwithstanding. And until that day, they will go about their pressing tasks of building a nation, but they will tolerate no nonsense. One of the things which impressed me about the remarkable progress of the country which is apparent to everyone, even at first glance, is the fact that the people of Israel are eager to use the latest of scientific apparatus and techniques in the development of their country. They realize that theirs is a small country. And in the days to come, it will have to live on its brains. Even greater countries are beginning to realize this fact. It takes great vision and courage for a small country like Israel, for example, to build an atomic reactor at great cost for the exploitation of nuclear energy for peaceful purposes. But within 3 or 4 months, such an atomic reactor will be in actual operation in Israel. When I was there, it was pleasant to read in the public press that a contract had been signed for the building in 1960 and 61 of 2 experimental desalting plants to produce at a reasonable cost fresh water, sweet water, from seawater. And this, if successful, as you can readily see, may revolutionize the entire economy of Israel, and not only of Israel. I was pleased to learn that the government of Israel is today actively encouraging the investment of private foreign capital in the country. It has passed laws quite recently, which in the form of tax exemptions over a period of years to approved enterprises, and in other ways, it is hoped that this will be brought about. This, as you may recall, the investment of private capital in the country. We have advocated, we and our colleagues, General Zionists, we have advocated for years, ever since the founding of the state. The young state is moving forward, gaining in economic strength and political confidence. It represents one of the most constructive and exciting enterprises of nation building in the world today. I was proud to see the Israeli eager to make their contribution to the upbuilding of other small states and to assist them with the expert knowledge which the Israeli have gained in those fields where they had to be and have been pioneers. The Israeli are far less interested in becoming a great state than in carrying on the noble traditions of a great people. And the Zionists of the United States, who helped so substantially in the establishment of the State of Israel, and Zionists all over the world, are eager to assist in its progress and growth and to safeguard its political security as far as goodwill and friendly interests can do. And those who maliciously charge them with being obsessed with political nationalism or with dual loyalties are guilty of slander and of bearing false witness against their fellow Jews. Their wicked propaganda is but another reason, though not, of course, the sole reason, why the Zionist movement must continue to build strength and support for the young state of Israel, as well as to keep the lines of communication open for a free, lively, and mutual exchange of spiritual and cultural contacts between the Israeli and Jews everywhere. I read where in recent weeks a reorganization has been effected here in our country in the disbursement of funds which are raised in the United States for Israel. The purpose of this reorganization is to ensure complete American responsibility and control over these funds. To that end, a new body, an American corporation, to be called the Jewish Agency for Israel Incorporated has been created, which will pass each year on the budgeting requirements which will be submitted to it by the Jewish Agency in Israel. And the American body will select the particular activities and programs which it wishes to support and will transmit earmarked, so to speak, earmarked funds for such approved activities. And to ensure that these funds are properly expended, an American representative or staff of representatives in Israel will be appointed by the American body. All this is to ensure that none of the monies which are raised in the annual campaigns of the United Jewish Appeal shall be used for any so-called political purposes, or for Jewish cultural and educational work, or for the support of the constructive enterprises in Israel which have heretofore been fostered by Zionist parties in the United States and Israel. And all Zionist educational and cultural activities which have heretofore been carried on by the Jewish Agency in the United States have now been transferred to the American Zionist Council, which will from now on presumably raise its own funds independently and will no longer receive any subsidy from the Jewish Agency. Now, insofar as such a reorganization has been made necessary by the exemption clauses in the provisions of the United States income tax to ensure tax deductibility for contributions, it is, of course, justified. I am not a tax expert. I read, however, the statement which was made by the chairman of the newly appointed body, in which he declared that as late as February of this year, the United Jewish Appeal received affirmation from the United States Treasury Internal Revenue Service that contributions to the United Jewish Appeal continue to be tax deductible as they have been without interruption since 1946. If this is so, I am at a loss to understand why the reorganization had to take place. Was it, as it has been averred, was it to broaden the participation of American Jewish leadership in the disposition of United Jewish Appeal funds spent in Israel? If so, then one is moved to ask, what new leadership has been drawn in by this device for which the high price of abandoning all support of Zionist cultural activities in the United States and all Zionist party-supported constructive enterprises in Israel is to be paid? Have the official representatives of the JDC or of the Council of Jewish Federations and Welfare Funds joined the Jewish Agency for Israel Incorporated? Or have other prominent so-called neutral, heretofore disinterested individuals? I scanned the list of names of the officers and board members of the new body, and I find that nearly all are very familiar names in Zionism, or are those of longtime friends, known friends of Israel. Where are the new names, the new faces? Where is the new strength, the new support? Does anyone really believe that under the new setup and because of it, additional monies will be allocated by the Welfare Federations of the United States for Israel? Or was the underlying hope of the reorganization that it will finally satisfy and silence those anti-Zionist groups which have been sniping at the United Jewish Appeal for years now and withholding their rather uncertain and putative contributions? I see where these groups are now celebrating their victory over the Zionists. That's what they have been asking for all along, they say. But at the same time, they are denouncing the whole reorganization set up as another Zionist trick to deceive the innocent contributors to the United Jewish Appeal. According to them, what has been accomplished is not enough. It was merely intended to comply with the Internal Revenue Code. The monies will still be going to Israel and will still be used for Zionist state-building purposes. It should be clear to everyone by now that you cannot hope to appease this mongrel group of Jewish Nazarites any more than you can hope to dissuade by logic and reason the bitter cranks and fanatics who have been smearing and desecrating our temples and synagogues. These Jews hated to see the state of Israel come into being. They hate to see it now grow strong and prosper. They have no love in their hearts for anything that is vital or positive in Jewish life. And their avowed devotion to Judaism as a religion is clearly counterfeit, only a clumsy propaganda foil. And so I must ask myself, was the recent reorganization perhaps the latest phase of the old obsessive and pathetic effort to enlarge the Jewish agency? An enlargement which can only be had, if at all, at the cost of draining the agency of all Zionist content. The Jewish agency in the United States has now officially divested itself of all its Zionist functions. And until recently, the agency was prosecuting vigorously and actually developing new programs and new activities in the field of education and culture. I ask myself, therefore, qui bono? Who is going to benefit from all this? Every attempt in the past to enlarge the Jewish agency proved self-defeating, whereas every effort to enlist the support and cooperation of responsible Jewish bodies, not on the basis of official representation and joint administrative bodies. Every attempt to enlist support and cooperation of responsible Jewish bodies in the past in order to achieve some major Zionist objective has been almost uniformly successful. I personally can foresee serious problems and difficulties for the newly constituted Jewish Agency for Israel Incorporated. Perhaps not within the board as it is presently constituted. Perhaps not immediately. But there are bound to be attempts at jockeying for control and at dictating policies as to projects which should be advanced or retarded or abandoned in Israel, especially in the matter of immigration schedules, which might seriously affect Israel's future development. But I can also foresee one positive good which might result from the new arrangement if the opportunity is seized. I have in mind the restored importance and prestige of the Zionist movement throughout the world. The Jewish agency must now, in view of what has happened here, become increasingly a body charged almost exclusively with fiscal tasks and responsibilities. In a real sense, it must become a joint distribution committee for Israel. All other functions must now revert back to where they legitimately belong, to where they have belonged ever since its inception, revert back to the Zionist movement. I am referring to such vital activities as education, the dissemination of Hebrew culture, the revival of interest in the Hebrew language and literature. I am referring to an active propaganda among Jews and non-Jews to maintain a favorable climate of public opinion for the young state. And whatever action may be found necessary from time to time, and whatever mobilization of forces may be found necessary from time to time, to defend the political security of the young state of Israel. I'm thinking of programs for increasing the channels of communication, opening up more and more of them between Israel and the Jews throughout the world. I'm also thinking of the historic function of the movement, which was to give positive direction and leadership to all the constructive forces within the Jewish community everywhere. And the freer the Zionist movement will now become, the more successful it will be in the performance of these vital tasks, which must continue for generations to come, and many of them indefinitely. The Zionist movement may now be able to rally to it all those forces which are completely committed to its program. It will not have to make concessions to other groups who are not prepared to go along with it on the total program, in the fond hope that they will then go along with it on a limited economic program for the benefit of Israel. It will no longer be found necessary, it never really was, to sacrifice the organization and the movement to the interests of fundraising strategies. The Zionist organization, the World Zionist Movement, should not try to draw into it other organized bodies in Jewish life which have specific programs and purposes of their own, all of whose members may not be prepared to subscribe wholeheartedly to the total Zionist program. The movement should not strive for a display of size, nor to impress the world with a fiction of numerical strength. Our organized movement in the days of its political triumphs represented only a fraction of world Jewry, but it was able to rally nearly all Jews to eager cooperation and strong support in the critical hour of decision. As in the past, Jews everywhere should be urged to join the Zionist movement and to help carry on its historic program of positive Jewish living, not for the sake of Israel alone, as was properly said earlier this evening, but for the sake of the Jewish people throughout the world. The Jewish people is far greater than Israel, and historically far more important. So is Judaism, our historic faith and way of life. They too are far more important. Zionism has always aimed to foster a total and vital Jewish existence and a creative Jewish community everywhere. Israel is an important part of the Jewish people, but only a part, and will always remain only a part, and we hope not an isolated part. And the Zionist movement must see to it that at no time does it become an isolated part. The future generations of Israeli must not be severed from full spiritual association with the rest of world Jewry, from sharing in the memories of its past or in the hopes of its future, even as world Jewry must never be disassociated from the life and fortunes of Israel. The Zionist movement has a great opportunity now to come into its own. But all that I have said is predicated upon the wholehearted support, not merely silent acquiescence, of the government of Israel and of its people. There must be an end to the deliberate devaluation of the Zionist movement on the part of those who today speak for the state of Israel. All definition mongering and that favorite pastime of separating the so-called sheep from the goats, those who settle in Israel and those who do not, must cease. The world Zionist movement must be given the prestige and the authority without which it cannot function, or can function only partially and haltingly. It has been a gross miscalculation in the past, a gross miscalculation, which led to the restriction of the functions and the competence of the World Zionist Organization, of its authority, and this slicing and this brushing it aside. It is a Zionist movement which built the state of Israel, not vice versa. It has been said frequently, the purposes of the Zionist movement have not been finally achieved through the establishment of the state of Israel. And the functions of the World Zionist Movement have never been limited and are not now limited to Aliyah, though Aliyah must continue to be one of its principal functions. The Jew who intends to remain where he is, then he need not make such a resolution with any apologetics. The Jew who intends to remain where he is by that fact not excluded from the Zionist fellowship or denied the proud name of Zionist. Such a Zionist living in the diaspora is as important to Israel as Israel is important to him. Israel and world Jewry will be in need of a powerful Zionist organization conceived in its fullest content. That is, as representing positive Jewish values, affirmative Jewish living, spiritual solidarity, historic continuity, and above all, a two-way bridge between Israel and the diaspora. The diaspora, where the majority of Jews of our people will continue to live in the foreseeable future. One historic people and one common destiny. That has been at the heart of the philosophy of our movement, which began not with the establishment of the state, nor with the Balfour Declaration, nor with the creation of political Zionism, but has been at the heart of our people's very life from the day that the temple was destroyed and, according to our tradition, the dream of the Messiah was born among our people. We'll celebrate in a few days the centennial of the birth of the immortal Theodor Herzl. Perhaps this year is a good year for the Jews of the world, especially the Jews of the United States, the greatest section of world Jewry, to rededicate itself to what he dedicated his life, and to that for which he sacrificed his life. A dignified Jewish existence everywhere. A national home, a state, and a proud and creative Jewish life throughout the world, drawing strength from this national center and giving strength unto it if Zionism will regain its confidence, its pride, and if our good people in Israel will finally realize that there's nothing to be gained by this continual sniping of the movement, and that nothing will be gained by the state of Israel if the movement ceases to exist. If these two things can happen, recovery here of morale and spirit, reaffirmation there, we may be on the threshold of a revitalized Zionist movement in the world, for which I deeply pray.